Hello, welcome to the African Startup Teardown podcast. This podcast analyzes how African consumer internet companies grow. My name is Yemi Johnson, and with me is my co-host, Nnamdi Okafor. So, Nnamdi, do you have a joke for people before we start?
No, I do not actually have this joke in the Naira, so...
Well, okay, I think I have a joke. I'm just going to tell a joke first. Some of you might have heard it, but many people have told me it's funny. So, if you're eating pepper right now, you probably want to be with some water. Mama Tomato, Papa Tomato, and Baby Tomato were walking down the street. And Baby Tomato was lagging behind. And so, Papa Tomato turned back to Baby Tomato and said, "Catch up. Catch up." Someone should laugh.
No. Don't do this again. Don't do this again. Let it be the last. Let it be the last. The final one.
You guys are just haters.
Thank God you have a
job. You guys are haters.
I had high expectations. So I'm not going to lie.
They're haters. Like,
I was trying to wonder where it's going. And then I'm like, okay, it's going somewhere. And then it didn't go anywhere.
You know what they say? Prophet is not wanted in his own hometown. Like, I'm in Nairobi right now, and I've been telling this joke to everybody, and they have laughed. It's only when I'm in Lagos I tell the joke that all of you are, like, haters. But I understand. We're not going to spend any more time here, because today we're going to be having Babajide join us to tear down M-Copper. So I'm going to, like, invite Babajide to tell us a bit about M-Copper and tell us a bit about himself. But Babajide, I want you to first of all tell us a bit about yourself before we get into M-Copper. I don't think I can do the business justice enough, but I remember the night that I met you. I can't remember where we met. Like, I found the business a lot more fascinating than I'd seen on the surface, and that's why I really wanted us to talk about M-Copper. So, Babajide, welcome to the stage. Tell us a bit about yourself, and we'll take it from there.
Thank you very much for having me. Yeah, so my name is Babajide Duroshola. My bio, it says, like, I'm a husband first, father next. And then on the side, I oversee the M-Copper Nigeria's business. And so we're going to go deep down into, like, what M-Copper is, what we do, how we've had much impact on the continent and the likes. But like I said, on the side, I oversee the Nigerian business for M-Copper. And then afterwards, I think what I would say is, like, I'm a sports lover, especially football. And then I'm a whiskey lover too as well. So that's who I am in a nutshell.
Thanks a lot, Babajide. That was good. And it's important to note for all the ladies on the call, is their husband first, in case you missed that. Babajide is hotcake like that. Have you seen him on Twitter? He's hotcake. And, like, look at his new avatar. Like, I really like the bubble head.
I do, right?
I love it too. So thank you for whatever
it is. It's a gift from us. But before we get into M-Copper as a business, I wanted to, for people who are new to, or people who are wondering why we're doing this. So myself and Nnamdi, we're co-hosts of African Startup Teardown. And what we do on the podcast is that we interview, like, senior executives and founders of startups that we think are doing, like, notable work. And by notable, I mean, like, actually building a defensible business and not just, like, playing around. I don't think anyone's playing around, but they have actually built a business. And I think there are many things we can learn from talking to founders and senior executives that have been in the trenches. So please give us a follow on Teardown Podcast. If you're new to this, I don't know how to pin our handle, unfortunately, but please give us a follow. So I'm going to be handing over the mic to Nnamdi to take us into business Teardown of M-Copper.
Okay, yeah, to start with, right, I think, like, the very first place to start from is just trying to understand what really is M-Copper and how has you evolved, especially from, like, before you joined and right now, like, what has that looked like?
Yeah, so I think that's a very interesting one, because, like, we've had people call us multiple type of names as a business, whether it's, like, a PayGo company, whether it's, you know, like, a solar company and the likes, but in just very simple terms, M-Copper is a financing platform, and the real operating word there is the financing platform that enables customers who are either underserved or underbanked to access a broad range of products and services that they can get without any form of collateral. So what we do is we use the power of technology by combining the Internet of Things and the ability for people to make digital payments in micro form. So basically everyday simple payments and solution for them to have more access into financing products or services that they typically could not do at a lump sum. So that is what we are in a nutshell. That's what service we provide across the continent in our four markets that we operate in today.
Okay. Well, I found that interesting. I think, like, to be honest, right, like, so there's a lot going on with MCOPA. My next question will be around, like, what's the value that MCOPA provides to your customers, right? Like, what's the job to be done? And how do you think around monetization based on what is currently being done and what other areas you think, like, there's a possibility to monetize for MCOPA?
Yeah. So, like, the mission for the company is very simple. It's for us to be able to make everyday essentials available to everyone. And when you really sit down and think about it, you then now put Africa as a whole and think, how has lending been conceptualized in the African market? You look at the average income of people in sub-Saharan Africa. You find out that like 85% of people live below earnings of less than $5.5 a day. Based off of Nigeria's exchange rate, I'm not even sure what that comes to right now. Whether it's because now we can be talking is 710 and then the next thing is 720. But think about a world where 85% of the population on the continent earn less than $5.5 a day. And as a result, they can't afford many things on outright purchases without them going for credit options. And then when you look at the things that people typically purchase, I'm talking about like your smartphones and the likes, you find out that the average retail price is $100 plus. So basically, someone is going to spend 60% of their monthly income just to acquire a smartphone, for instance. And this is also using those guys who earn $5.5 a day. We're not even talking about the guys who live below that. We're not talking about the guys who are between the $2, the $3, the $4 as well. And so this is a very big challenge that is facing us on the continent today, because 85% of the population is quite a huge number. And so what is MCOPA doing, or how is MCOPA operating in this space? What MCOPA does is our customers who typically are underserved or unbanked, we provide a solution for them where they're able to own these everyday products by just providing an ID card and being able to make an initial first deposit. I'm sure many people will be like, okay, wait, hang on a second. What does that mean? And so what we do today is, take for instance, you want to buy a smartphone and you earn less than, should I say, 50,000 naira a month. The average cost of a decent smartphone is north of $100. So based off of today's exchange rates, let's even be conservative in our spending and use the CBN rate. You are spending nothing less than 45,000 to 50,000 naira to buy a smartphone. What MCOPA does is, typically when you have such income, most times you are either underbanked or outside the normal banking circle. What MCOPA does is we allow you to own that product by being able to provide a valid ID card and make an initial deposit for you to go to own that smartphone. And so that's the value proposition that we provide for people who are everyday people who have a yearning or an urge to own these everyday products, despite the fact that you look around us, inflation is crippling us, incomes are shrinking, and then people still need these everyday essentials or everyday products. And while I would call a smartphone an everyday product is because now we are now in a digital economy and the world is kind of like really changing where people are taking their businesses online. And so you need to own this so that you, whether it's part of a form of income, earnings, or whether it's something that you're using to even keep in touch with family, friends, and the likes. And so that's what MCOPA provides. That's what MCOPA does. And that's the value proposition that we do. And then on the unique selling proposition of the business, it's around certain things. It's around the customer having the choice of ownership, what they want to own, and the flexibility of payment. So today you want a Samsung A03 core, you are able to get that Samsung A03 call on the M-Copa platform, and you are able to pay with ease over a period of time. And so that is what M-Copa does. The next thing that we do is also inclusiveness. The absence of credit scoring, you know, you want to take a loan, think about the Nigerian banks where you want to take a loan, they tell you to bring your father's house, bring the skull of like a cockroach and all those things like that. You don't necessarily need that with like M-Copa on the M-Copa platform. What you need to be able to do is provide a valid ID card that says, okay, Babajide is who Babajide says he is, and pay the initial deposit, and then you're on your way and set to owning that smartphone.
Okay. My follow-up question there would then be, so M-Copa bears the risk of, for example, right, the inflation, and then also like the volatility of the naira. So like these commodities, when the person takes the loan, right, and the price of the item was like 30K, and then because of the naira and dollar thing, it's now at 40K. M-Copa bears that risk, or does this shift it to the customer?
Well, it's very interesting. So when you take a loan, whether it's cash or a product loan, it's still going to be the initial value that you took the loan. So if I took a phone loan that was like 50K, I'm still going to pay 50K at the end of the day, because at the end of the day, that stock is already out of market and it's into the hands of the customer. So you've already taken that ownership of that stock. What you are then now fulfilling is the contractual agreement to pay the remaining balance over a stretch period of time.
So, like, based off the thing you mentioned, which is that people just need an ID card and an initial deposit, I was a bit curious, like, that seems quite risky, but I imagine that, I mean, it makes sense for the business. But it's then for me, like, what is the thing that attracts people to M-Copa? Like, is that like a very strong value proposition that just like drives like increasing word of mouth? Or does it help build trust? I'm curious to know, like, what kind of magic that creates within the business, or if it creates any magic at all?
Yeah. So before I go back to the USP, there are two things here when I said about M-Copa as well. It's us taking the Internet of Things. So that is the technology in itself. And marrying that with the digital payments and the ability for people to pay on an everyday basis or a weekly basis or a monthly basis. So while people are able to bring a valid ID card, bring the initial deposit, there is also a contractual part whereby as they own that phone or they own that PayGo solar system, they are supposed to fund it with credit every day. Once the customer doesn't fund it with credit every day, then what you see is that the Internet of Things then triggers and the phone or the PayGo solution is locked. So you are not able to use it. So think about it in a system whereby people are able to pay for the day of usage. And that is very important, because what that means is that at every day, I can pay the convenience. So a very good example is 400 Naira for some of our smartphones right now. People are able to pay 400 Naira on a daily basis, some 300 Naira on a daily basis, for them to be able to take ownership of that smartphone. And so what is that unique value proposition? It's the fact that, number one, it's inclusive. So no credit scoring happens, you know, there is no crazy algorithm at the back end where, you know, people then now start to say, oh, this is who you are, we're not able to give you this loan, things like that. It's at the ease whereby, and the convenience is of two parts. One, convenience on flexibility of choice. I need an A03 call, for instance, or a smartphone, maybe any of the Samsung or Nokia phones, which we offer today as part of our list of product items. I find an agent, so I don't need any other paperwork apart from my ID to verify that I am Babajide who says I'm buying this phone. And then I'm able to take ownership of that device on the spot. So is that customer choice? It is also the flexibility, which means customers can pay for the product at their own convenience. So remember, we are dealing with the underbanked. Remember, we are dealing with people who are earning less than $5.5 a day. And so there are days where things will be tight, and there are days where, you know, they'll be flushed with cash. And so the ability for them to be able to pay on a daily basis, on a weekly basis. So take, for instance, I have money to pay for one day. I pay for one day, 400 Naira. I have 1,000 Naira to pay for 2.5 days. I pay for that 2.5 days. I have, you know, 3,000 naira to pay for like a extended period of time. I pay that 3,000 naira for that extended period of time. It is that flexibility that makes it much more attractive. It is what makes it the word of mouth. And when I'm talking about the people who are our customers, I'm talking about your barbers, your tailors, your organizers, the transport worker, whether it's the Uber driver or the guy who does Lagos-Ibadan Expressway. I'm talking about your farmers. I'm talking about, you know, your electricians, your plumbers, the drivers, and people who typically cannot just walk to structured financial institutions to acquire a loan. And they cannot just put that money together. So think about how many organizers, tailors, barbers, and the likes can put 50,000 naira together cash and walk into a store and make that purchase of that phone. And so those are the people who our business serves. And to be honest, they constitute 80% of the African population today.
I think like that was very insightful and that was really great.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that, I mean, this is somewhat like a pay-as-you-go service. I'm beginning to imagine like which other businesses this apply to. So for instance, a very common example that people give is DSTV. I'm not trying to drag them or anything, but people are like, oh, I want my DSTV to be pay as you go. And I imagine, like, I'm trying to imagine like what the difference in the dynamics of the business is that enables MCorpa to be able to achieve a pay as you go service for an item that is relatively expensive, like $100. Sure, like it's relatively cheap for some of you on this call, but for a lot of people, $100 is a lot of money. And so it's like, what dynamics exist in the business that enables a business like MCorpa to be able to achieve this, but a business like DSTV to struggle to give people this particular thing? Because I know since I was a child, people have been asking DSTV to do pay-as-you-go payment. Or maybe it's just not realistic for them. Maybe they could do it, but it's not just realistic. But I wanted to know if you had like any insights to share on that specific thing.
So, like, I think the differences in what happens or what service or product is provided is what makes it kind of like different. So, you're talking about a smartphone here versus a PayGo or a proposed PayGo TV that needs to probably pay for a subscription, pay for content, all those things like that with multiple partners, and they don't have the luxury to box them into certain things. So while I can't speak necessarily for the DSTV business, for us as a business, when you think about financing and financing, the core is being able to finance a broad range of products and services without collateral or having a guarantor. So that's like I said, combining the power of digital payments and the Internet of Things that we usually do. And so for us, the more products and services that we have on our platform, then we are able to provide a full cycle for our customer that either supports them in like customer service, supports them in acquiring customers, you know, like extending that level of ownership, not just for themselves, but for their spouses, their relatives, you know, their families, their friends, people in the same compound they live in, and things like that. And so in our own case, that flexible payment, the digital micropayment, the accessibility, and this is something that I'm going to talk more around on, like the acquisition strategy of like how we even acquire these customers in the first place. How is it that like MCorpa, you know, most times people tell you that like, oh, MCorpa, we don't know you guys, we don't see your billboards out there. But I'm like, you won't know me on Twitter, because like most of the customer base who I serve, I don't necessarily sit on Twitter. They sit most likely in their shops, you know, the shop by the roadside is the organizer who is on the corner of the street pumping tires. And so those are the people who we access, and they know MCorpa because they've either gotten a smartphone, they've been able to like extend credit in their business and the likes too as well. And so for us, it's that customer acquisition strategy where we use our direct sales force to acquire this customer. So it's like people who are typically offline, you need to acquire them in an offline method. So someone who is going to own the smartphone Sometimes this is their first ever smartphone that they are going to use, or it could be their upgraded smartphone. Maybe they were using a feature phone and now they are upgrading to like an Android phone too as well. So those kind of customers, the acquisition channel and the strategy we use for them is not online. You are doing direct to sales acquisition where you're meeting them at their place of their business, at the place of their comforts, whether it's their homes, and directly acquiring them while also building this entire customer relationship with them, you know, after just acquisition, ensuring that they are paying, ensure you are giving them good customer service, even remotely without them actually walking to a physical shop or a physical store. And so that's what makes our own business very different. The flexibility of micropayments daily and the acquisition strategy where we can acquire them from miles away.
Okay, I think this is like a very good segue to my next question, which is, how do you think, or how does M-Copa think around like go-to-market, maybe for a new product line or for what the thinking like? If, for example, M-Copa now has a laptop that's now like has all the whole pay-as-you-go thing installed in it, the IoT thing installed in it, and then it's ready to be launched, right? And you want people to get this, right? How does M-Copa think around like their go-to-market?
So one thing that we've spent the last 10 years plus in building is our capability in the two things that I talked about in the last time, which was one, the direct sales force, being able to put boots on the ground. Remember, we are dealing with underserved, underbanked customers. We are dealing with people who are either first-time smartphone users, feature phone users too, or even if they had a smartphone, the smartphone wasn't as powerful enough to carry many apps. And so that door-to-door strategy where we are meeting them at the point of their business, at the point of their livelihood, is very important on our like go-to-market strategy. The second pillar that is very important is the infrastructure that allows us to make digital micropayments on a daily basis. So where people can pay daily, they can pay weekly, and it's very easy. The ease and the cost of payment is not so high. These are like very key ingredients for us when we are looking at our go-to-market strategy. Based off of this, this is what makes us the clear market leader. And I can clearly say that this is what makes us the clear market leader in the African space in terms of this. And today, M-Copa is in 4 markets where we cover Kenya, which is the first market where we got into, Uganda, which was our second market, Nigeria, which is the third, and Ghana, which is our newest market where we expanded into last year. And so for us, these are the things that we think about. And we plan to expand into one new market at least every year. Ghana's expansion was going so well, whereby we saw them grow 2 times faster than we did in Nigeria. And Nigeria grew 1.5 times faster than we did in Uganda. And so as we get better as a company and we start to understand the core pillars, which is the direct sales force and how to engage and acquire that direct sales force, and the payment platforms, how to ensure that we are building the infrastructure that allows people to make micropayments, we are getting better as a company to acquire these customers who are on the back.
Okay, I'm going to ask my final question before I hand over to Yemi. But it's really around the whole underbank thing, right? From what I've gathered, right, M-Copa is targeted at the, what is called like the lower class, right, of the society. People can't really afford a lot of these luxuries, right? So what particular behavior have you noticed about this market segment that you think many people are unaware? Could something like default rate be lower, or how they are so key on trust? Kinds of things, like, is there anything you've noticed about this market and that has really changed your mind, or isn't something you think is popular amongst like us on Twitter or people on Twitter?
So it's not, to be honest. At the end of the day, regardless of our social circle that we fall in, human beings will be human beings, and so we want access to some of the same things too as well. While many people say, oh, these people, they are underbanked, you know, where do we start from, things like that, this is a segment that needs that access. So a very good example is a tailor who is trying to expand her business from the person who knows her on the street. So she wants to be able to put her business on Twitter, on Instagram, you know, like, oh, these are the styles that I'm sewing. My shop is XYZ. We do deliveries. You know, we can come take your measurements and then we'll sew and deliver in X number of business days, although maybe they might not do that, knowing how Nigerian tailors are. But there is the need to as well. And this cuts across a whole lot of walks of life, whether it's the transport worker, the guy who is driving an Uber, or it's the organizer too as well, who is trying to move away from the point where he's saying, you know, the placard where you had the organizer here, and he's trying to move his business to Google, because we know so many times that we happen, especially when you move on Nigerian roads, you get into a ditch and your tire blows out, and the next thing you're looking for is, where is the organizer to as well? And so if you knew, you could check Google and you could find, oh, the nearest organizer to you, you know it's easy. And so these people are looking to also expand their business offering, but they are already cut out of the normal credit part, because when you look at it, even you think about it as well, thank God they had some people that are providing credit facilities for people in our own class. I think that was what then now made it easy for us to have access to credit. But it's still not something that is very accessible today if you're not a big corporation or the likes too as well. And so us being able to provide that credit for that person at that point was very, very important. And so you look at all the characteristics. They have the phone. They still want good customer service. They want, when they have issues, for those issues to be resolved. They want easy ways to make payments, because already the money they are earning is fighting against the loan they have, the food they are going to eat, transportation, and the anyhowness that happens in Africa. And so that ease of payment is something that they are looking to ensure that they are able to make. So most of the things that you typically see someone who is on the upper class looking for, they are looking for it too as well. Like, how is your customer service to me? If I call you, would you answer? Are you even a legitimate business too as well? Have you ever thought of it like, we come from, and this is bringing it home to Nigeria, we come from a world where people used to buy fufu in Computer Village as smartphones. And today, someone is walking to you with an M-Kopa phone and telling you, you can buy an M-Kopa phone, you know, pay an initial deposit of X amount, and then you are able to then now pay over 4-6 months, and you're able to pay daily too as well. Imagine we've moved the world from where people had that lack of trust because they've been experienced in buying fufu as phone, to where someone is actually buying a phone off the corner of the street. And so these are the things that we provide. This is the trust level that we provide. You know, that constant engagement, that relationship building, that being in their face, the onboarding being physical, and happening in front of the customer, where the customer actually pays the money and walks away with a device that they can call, they can text, and they can use the internet.
Okay, that's awesome, to be honest.
Actually, I would just want to even chip in there. Like, I mean, like, the big takeaway from what I got there is that, like, building trust, but like with physical presence, it seems like it's a big deal for this. I don't know if it's a big deal for other customer segments, but for this customer segment, it seems like building trust with physical presence. And you mentioned the thing of like being like having that physical presence where they see the phone, they talk to the person selling it to them, and it's some form of like also personal customer care. Is there another like summary that you might also add to that?
Yes. So there is also the digital trust, because when the guy walks away with the phone and then he's going to buy 3 days of usage and he pays through any of our payment points that we have as a business, there is that digital trust that that guy needs to understand that that money has been received by M-Kopa, and so automatically he has X number of days of usage. So if I'm someone who is a organizer and I go to the nearest POS agent and I pay my M-Kopa pay-as-you-go, for my pay-as-you-go phone, I need to be able to get that digital communication that tells me and says, thank you, Babajide, you know, you just purchased 3 days usage for your M-Kopa phone, you know, your next usage, your next renewal date is, today is Thursday, your next renewal date is Sunday. So already that level of trust that even after you've moved away from the physical point where you've onboarded the customer, that level of trust where the customer is able to still understand where they are, even to the point where when the phone is about to lock, because yes, we do have, that's where the IoT comes in, where the phone actually locks when the days of usage is done. You get a message that says, your phone is about to lock in the next 2 days. Please make sure you like top up your M-Kopa phone for you to be able to continue using. These are the pillars that are building that trust.
Okay. Thanks a lot for that. I'd also take us a bit backwards. I like when you were talking about like your go-to-market, and you mentioned like the direct sales force and the payment infrastructure, which sort of sets you apart. I wanted to know like what indices that you use to measure like how far you've come in terms of growth. So whether it's like country expansion, I think you mentioned in 4 countries, but I think just to give like the general public like a general sense of like what indices or KPIs you use to then say, hey, this is how far we have come. And if there's any like publicly available data you can share, that would be awesome.
Yeah, sure. So for us, there are a lot of things that are the pillars that shows our level of growth and our success, whether it's from the total number of customers we've acquired to the kind of partnerships that we have as a business. To date, M-Copper has acquired 2 million customers. That is 2 million people on the African continent have used an M-Copper product. It's very interesting that it took us 8 years as a business to acquire our first 1 million unique customers. It took us 18 months to acquire 2 million unique customers. And it's going to take us less than 12 months for us to reach our 3 million mark. And so it shows how we've improved as a business over time. And this is across our 4 markets. So 8 years to reach 1 million customers. In 18 months after that 8 years, we've acquired 2 million customers. And in less than 12 months, we are going to hit 3 million customers too as well. And that's on the acquisition side. We've recorded about a 2.5% times growth in the new customer acquisition since 2021, which just shows how fast we are growing as a business and why we are recognized by Financial Times as one of the fastest growing companies in Africa. And interesting, that number was based off of 2020's data. And so it's very interesting to see what happens for 2021's data. Remember, we said we did 2.5x the growth of that.
And yeah.
Other things are our partnerships that we are in today. For example, today in Uganda, we have a partnership with MTN where a customer will get 50 MB daily data as part of their financing plan. So we are signing core partnership with the telcos in our market that allows us to extend the product offering that is not just about the smartphone that they are getting. It's about all the other value-added services that are layered on top of the smartphone. So they get supplementary daily data, which comes to about 1.5 gigabyte data a month. So imagine someone going from where they had a 2G phone to getting a smartphone, and then they are also getting 1.5 gig data on a monthly basis. And this is happening in Uganda. Something similar is happening in Ghana and in Kenya and Nigeria. We are in the works to ensure that something like that also happens. And so these are some of the things that we as a business shows how impressive we've come. If you look at the total number of unlocked finance we've extended to the 2 million people, we've done over $600 million worth of financing for those 2 million customers. And as a result of that, we've been able to create 500 new jobs since 2019. And so imagine this is post-pandemic, and then you're still able to create 500 new jobs. And I'm talking about full-time jobs that allows us to hire people globally. So from our commercial team to engineering team, who sit globally too as well. And we are also recognized on Fortune Magazine's Impact 20, which highlights like 20 global ventures and equity-backed companies that are tackling key social and environmental problems. So these metrics just show the level of growth we have as a company and how well we've done over the last couple of years.
Yeah, particularly like that, like you're sort of delivering more value to the customers with these partnerships. I think like that's commendable. But one thing that I found really amusing is a thing where you mentioned like 1 million customers in 8 years, another million in 18 months, and a million probably in 12 months. And I'm curious, like what sort of operational excellence, like what sort of, like maybe from a very high level, you can describe how the organization is able to achieve the operational excellence that you can accelerate the growth you had in 8 years into 18 months and then even compress it into like a 12-month window. Maybe you can just cover it from a very high level. And if you can like maybe give a specific example, that'd be awesome.
So like I said, it's still to those two key pillars. The two key pillars are the acquisition channel, which is acquiring the customer direct door to door, And the second is ensuring that the payment is easy and flexible. It's easy for us to pay. So think about it. The very good example is Nigeria is the only country we operate in today that has no mobile money. So we had to create multiple payment options that makes it easy for customers to pay. So whether you're a cash customer, it's easy for you to pay. Whether you're a digital customer already who has some form of digital, whether it's a bank account, you have an ATM card, it's easy for you to pay. And so these are the infrastructures that make it easy for us as a business, for us to scale. This is also adding very, very smart people who are building like amazing teams, building the right culture in the business, ensuring that people are engaged, they are happy, they're excitable, things like that. Like our engagement score is in the top 80th percentile, which is one of the highest in the world. And we have over 1,500 plus employees as a business today. And so these are the things that we're doing that ensures that on a day-to-day basis, we are growing our business, we are growing our acquisition channels, we are growing our volumes, and we're ensuring that people are paying. Because I know the next question you're going to ask is, you're giving all these loans, so how are people paying?
That's a good question.
It turns out that our default rates are quite low. And so because we've been able to ensure that there's collections in, we've been able to build that relationship with the customer. And remember, like I usually tell people, our business is farming and not hunting. And when they say hunting, you know, like you're like a normal consumer B2C product, you find the customer, you acquire them, that's like hunting, you know, shoot to kill. But for us, it's farming. So the agent is going to the person and he's saying, hey, you know, Mama Babajide, how are you today? How is business moving? Remember that phone that you said you wanted? How much do you have now? She's like, oh, you know, my deposit now, I only have 3,000. Come back next week. And the agent is coming back the next week. So it's farming. It's that entire cultivating process where we are building that relationship with the customer that allows us to ensure that we are effectively collecting at the end of the day.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. What assumptions is this business built on? So to give proper context, if you look at Uber as a business without like a mobile phone, without smartphones and like GPS that is always on smartphones, a business like Uber could never have existed. And I think like based on your GTM, I can sort of figure out like what those assumptions might be, but I'd like to hear from you, like what assumptions enable your business to actually exist?
Yeah. So for us, I think payments is it. And this was born out of two of our co-founders, Nick Huge and Jesse Moore, who worked with M-Copa, like M-Pesa 16 years ago. And they were part of the guys who were on the team to ensure that they were creating the rails for like a cashless society in a very cash-packed, cash-heavy society back in Kenya. And so after helping build M-Pesa with the team, they then now started to think, okay, what more can we build on top of this product? What more can we build on M-Pesa that gets us to a point where we're able to offer other products and services? And so the original business idea was a connected asset finance proposition, which allowed them to put solar products in Kenya and to ensure that they were doing the rural electrification. And so that's how we started off as a company. Those were some of the things too as well. As time progressed and we started to get better at our technology, and we found out that we could put that technology in other aspects and not only the pay-as-you-go solar solution. And so what we started to do was we went into other product portfolios, which is the smartphone, and then some other portfolios that we offer in like our other markets, like the electric motorcycles in Kenya too as well. And so we started to put that, and we started to finance it, and we started to see the full business come to life based off of the idea that someone thought, you know, we need to digitize payments in the African continent. And so that was what it was really built on.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, I mean, I guess like, as you mentioned, with this technology existing, which is like payments, like without like ability to collect like payments, especially mobile money, it wouldn't exist. And I guess like after that existed, a bunch of other companies arose to do something similar, like in different ways. But moving on to like my next question, and I think you've hinted a bit to this at the beginning, but when you acquire a customer, like say you acquire a customer on a smartphone, how do you think about like expanding that customer's LTV? Because now you've acquired, say, 2 million customers. And do you think of it like, oh, we acquire one customer and that's all? Or do you think that, hey, I acquired this customer might buy a smartphone today. Next thing, it will come back to buy solar power. The next year, it might come back to get a laptop. Because I'm just curious to know how you think about customer expansion and how you roll out product lines based on how you think around customer expansion.
Yeah, so think of everything that can be done on a smartphone. The smartphone today is one of the essential tools that people help in building their businesses. So the person acquires one product, he's done with the phone. And then the next thing we say is, hey, you know, we've seen that you've paid your phone and you've done it really well. Do you want cash now? And so the person has the option of taking the cash. They have the option of taking vouchers too as well, where they can do into it. And that is why like we're fast becoming like a merchant place, where we are having partners like some of our partners like Turaco Insurance, Copia in Kenya too as well. Even the telcos who are our partners, remember they are getting data services and bundled together with the smartphones, where customers are able to then now make further purchases. And remember, you've already started to teach the person the habit of putting a certain amount daily. So maybe the person was used to putting 350 naira daily to pay for their smartphone. This is a 350 naira muscle that they've been able to build. After paying for that phone for 6 months, they are still able to then now take that 350 naira to consume other products, whether it's like a digital insurance product or it's a cash lending product that they will help to use to expand their business. And so that's how we think about building the lifetime value of the customer. Remember, it's still part of the thing where I said our business is farming and not hunting. And hunting is, you know, you get the customer, acquire the customer. Once the customer consumes, they are off on their way. While for us, while the customer, you get the customer, you acquire the customer, you nurture them to be able to consume other arrays of products that we provide.
That makes a lot of sense. We're close to the end of this, and I think I just go straight to my last question. Tell us, what is the bull case for M-Copper? Like right now, you've told us like you've like acquired 2 million customers since lifetime, and you're not accelerating the pace at which you acquire customers. But for an investor, what is the bull case for M-Copper?
So for us, we're a well-capitalized business, and what we are looking to do is focus on expanding our platform to more markets. That is bringing the variety of financial services to our customer base. And remember, like I said, it took us nearly a decade for us to get to our first 1 million customers. It took us 18 months to get to 2 million customers. And at the current pace that we are going this year, it would take us, give or take, about 9 months for us to get to the 3 million customer too as well at the end of the day. So our ambition over the next 5 years and over the horizon is for us to be a financial partner of choice to more than tens of millions of underserved customers across Africa. So whether it's from asset financing to personal loans to micro insurance to more products that can be built on the smartphone. And that is why for us, the smartphone is a very important point. And then that doesn't stop there. We're backed by some of the world's leading global institutions who are equity investors like Generation Investment Management, LTG, and the CDC Group. And so M-Copper is looking to just become that Pan-African fintech. Well, we are a Pan-African fintech because we have 2 million customers as a business, but we are looking for us to be able to scale that to tens of millions of customers over the next couple of years.
Okay. Well, no modesty there. No, I like that. So we're coming to the end of this space. I can see a few people have raised hands for questions, but I've not accepted anyone yet because I don't want to take up time. But I appreciate everyone that's joined this call. As I mentioned, please follow us on Teardown Podcast. You can also follow myself, Nnamdi and Babajide, to learn more from all of us. I hope everyone has had a great time. And if you had a great time, like tweet and be like, hey, really liked listening to the folks on Teardown podcast. And if you had a bad time, I think you had a problem. Okay, then. Thanks a lot, Babajide, for coming on the space and looking forward to like MCOPA success and like just looking forward to like your own strides. Thanks a lot, everyone, and have a beautiful night.